This is the Struggling Entrepreneur podcast series, episode number 151. A startup entrepreneur who is focused on not only an offering for a product that he's got, but also in helping other entrepreneurs with a lean startup model. An interview with James Whittle of GroupCharger.com and WorkCity.com. Welcome, and you're listening to The Struggling Entrepreneur. The podcast where we address the challenges that you face when you're a struggling entrepreneur and where we try and assist you with experienced and successful small business owners who share their lessons learned as well as resources to help you become successful. In this episode of The Struggling Entrepreneur, we interview James Whittle. He happens to be a longtime history-bound entrepreneur with his successes and also his failures, which he'll mention in the podcast, as well as a career in IT with Digital Equipment Corporation, or DEC. He now focuses his attention on creating startups, running them, managing them, and also helping other startups with the lean startup model. And you'll hear about his new community that he's starting, WorkCity.com. You'll also hear about his offering, which is called GroupCharger.com. And it's interesting to note that he is one of the members that is so focused on co-working environments as a place to get the community going, get the mindshare going, and also find the right partners that you may want to deal with when you start your business venture. So this interview was conducted at the co-working environment called CoSpace in Austin, and you'll hear James Whittle talk about his ideas that he's very passionate about in helping the entrepreneurs with the new lean startup model so that they can become successes in the first 6 months and then move on to other things contributing to the community. Let's listen in. Welcome, and this is Fred Castaneda, your host of The Struggling Entrepreneur. Today, we have a guest, James Whittle, who happens to be part of a firm that is starting, which is creating a product and also another type of venture, which is very interesting. We'll talk about it. From the co-space environment here of the co-working nature in Central Austin, welcome, James Whittle, to this episode of The Struggling Entrepreneur.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you for letting me be a part of it.
It's interesting to know what you're going to be doing, which is not only an offering, but also a community-based type of organization, which may be a little bit new and which may be of interest to our listeners, which, of course, are aspiring entrepreneurs, those that haven't launched, those that are launching, and those that have launched. So usually the entrepreneurs from 0 to 12 months are our listeners. Before we get started, I'd like to know a little bit about your background. Can you tell us things like what kind of education you had, and did you work in the private sector, public sector? What kind of experience, all that led you up to being an entrepreneur?
Sure. Yeah, actually, I started out in computer science and business. I graduated from Arizona State many, many years ago. Sort of knew I was an entrepreneur, didn't really have any experience with that, but I started out working for a company called Digital Equipment Corporation.
Ah, DEC, Mr. Kenneth Olson. Yeah. He just passed away recently.
Oh, yeah, that's too bad. He was a fabulous engineer.
Oh, and a wonderful competitor, especially back in the 70s and 80s. As you know, I worked with IBM, and boy, they were our competitor, and they had the network up and running before anybody else.
Yep, they had it down pat. They didn't understand PCs, but they did understand mini computers. They did a great job. But what I learned from that company, my first 7 years of a career there, was how important a company culture is all about. And they had a fabulous company culture. It was very community before that was the buzzword at the time. People really, really did a great job with collaboration and building new products and engineering products. And they didn't do a very good job on the marketing and sales side. But for where I was at the start of my career, it was a great way to get started in understanding technology, understanding the power of a network. And along the way, I had the entrepreneurial bug. Started out in the.
Did you start out as an engineer or as a programmer?
As a programmer, moved into sort of senior project management sorts of things.
On the software side, then.
On the software side.
Oh, okay, yeah. Good. So you programmed for the DEC PDP-11s and everybody else?
Yeah, absolutely. Vaxes, RDB, VMS, all that stuff.
Forward. Our tough competitors, boy, did they slam us time and time again.
Yeah, it was a great environment. But I knew at some point that it wasn't my skills weren't the best at developing. I understood it was fair at it, but not great at it. Now I knew I wanted to do something else and to create things. So by the early 90s, I moved to Columbus, Ohio, and got involved in consulting and was still doing project management, account management, some programming for a contract house there, and got involved with a project with Victoria's Secret in Columbus. And we were working alongside of Anderson Consulting and a few other consulting firms, and got a great experience about what systems integration was all about, and really sort of high-end program development, project management, and other things. So really got the bug that there was another way of doing it, and broke out on my own with a couple of Anderson folks, started a consulting firm in Columbus, grew it to 150 people and three offices, a wild success, sold my interest, started doing some angel investing, seed investing, started another consulting firm, sold that to some employees in the late 90s, moved to Austin, Texas, and mm-hmm. been here ever since.
And so you've had already multiple successes in starting your own firm, that is creating a startup, mm-hmm. and then your exit strategy of selling it.
Sure.
And having been successful a couple of times. And as you say, you've been involved in the area, especially in IT, you've been involved in the area of consultation with customers in the consulting industry, in the business and consulting industry. That's very interesting. And right now, you are a full-fledged entrepreneur, and you're actually involved in more startups, right?
Yeah, actually, I'll say one of the best learning lesson I had was when I first moved to Austin. We had a wild failure versus a wild success.
Well, you know the old saying, fail once, fail often, but fail quickly and learn.
Exactly, which we did, and it was a great idea. I want to go into the details, but that's where I learned the most. I mean, I had two wins right out of the chutes.
Can you tell us what industry?
It was in healthcare, home medical equipment.
Okay.
And we were creating a franchise to go out and take some of those products and a lot of other ones for the aging American demographic in the early 2000s was really starting to hit.
I resemble that remark.
And we got on QVC and had the first show of its kind on QVC, sold close to $400,000 worth of product in an hour. And our suppliers liked the idea so much, they stole it. So we had that nice little moment. And
so you became almost a Jack LaLanne. As you know, Jack LaLanne invented the fitness gyms and the universal gyms. He never patented the idea. He never protected his intellectual property, and everybody stole it from him.
Yeah, this one we probably didn't have any IP in it other than a great go-to-market model, but it was more about our supplier deciding that they could do it without us. So anyway, no big deal. You learn a lot, and we did, you know, kind of get to.
Sounds like you didn't have an IP attorney that was helping you along the way.
Yeah, we had some. See, there's some interest from some franchising folks that want to get behind us. But at the end of the day, we didn't pursue the lawsuit. We decided to just go ahead and move forward. I thought at that time, you know, we had so much opportunity that it would be in our best interest just to get moving on the next idea. And we did chase the guys down and try to make something out of it in terms of a lawsuit. But it was going to cost us more to pursue that than to actually get anything out of the lawsuit.
So, wow.
What? Anyway, live and learn. It was a heck of a relocation to Austin, but I got into some other things. By the mid-2000s, started back into some consulting and started working with the national labs in New Mexico with Sandia National Labs, and then ultimately Los Alamos as a part of a bid with the UT system and Lockheed to be a part of LANL. So I got this exposure that back to the whole idea of a network. Got some exposure to how valuable that could be for technology and technology-driven entrepreneurship, technology-driven economic development, and decided around 2007, 2008 that there's got to be a way to build that sort of platform for entrepreneurs to tap into. So I dabbled in a couple of different things that might solve that, and ultimately, which has led us, ultimately, that led me to what is now two things. Group Charger, which is a web app.
It's an offering that you're going to have.
It's an offering that we launched on April 1st, which will be available to groups of anywhere from 50 to 10,000 people. Typically, we're calling them micro affinity groups, so groups like churches and entrepreneurial organizations like a CoSpace, alumni chapters, groups where people actually know each other and have an affinity for them.
Professional fraternities, things like that.
Exactly.
Like especially non-social fraternities, the scholastic fraternities, the professional fraternities.
Clubs and that sort of thing, Greek organizations. Actually, where folks have an affinity for that group, and we're going to make it much easier for them to do business within that group, to share introductions and referrals across social media and even email and other things like that, but just make it a richer experience within the group, and to increase the engagement, increase the participation of the members of that group who already have an interest in being a part of it. So that's one thing that I has been in the back of my mind to do, and now we're doing it. The other one is a group called Work City, and it's, you know, Rhapsody in Work. But what it basically boils down to is a collection of business builders, folks who have experience building businesses, and as alongside of early stage entrepreneurs and investors, and basically following the lean process, the lean startup and lean product development process, create an environment where people can actually build the product that they're building or their business that they're building, and then also get assistance from their peer group. And so I look at it as the venture capital model, where it's great that you have that funding and great that you have a great idea and a lot of support services and so forth. But the best part of, in my mind, the best part of being a part of a venture-backed firm is the access to that network, the access to that intelligence, the business intelligence, and that knowledge that you need at the right time to make the decision that you might need to make at a time that where you, if you were working solo or on your own, you don't have access.
I'd like to follow a couple of things.
Sure.
That you mentioned. When you say network, there are two different ideas that may come to mind to our listeners. One mm-hmm. is the actual physical communications network, mm-hmm. which you learned at Digital, mm-hmm. and how valuable that was. And I know that as a developer, you do a lot of work there. And the second one is a network, which means the community of people and sharing. It looks like you're melding both of those. When you talk about a platform,
right.
the offering actually happens to use the physical communications network, but it also enables the people's community in order to be a peer support group or a peer support network.
Exactly.
Right?
That's a great way to look at it. Those are two different definitions, and we're putting both into play through those two things. So we have some other things here at CoSpace, some other things that are coming up as well. I think I'd encourage any entrepreneur out there to find a local co-working facility and be a part of it, even if it's just for a day a month or a day a week mm-hmm. or full-time. Be a part of it. This is a great environment. There's, I think, 650 of them, I believe, around the world now, maybe 350, maybe.
Yeah, seven here in Austin.
Seven here in Austin.
And I've interviewed four of them.
Okay. Well, they're all great, and they're all different flavors. It's phenomenal.
So each has their own character, and each has their own audience and everything.
Exactly.
For instance, the CoSpace environment that I interviewed 2.5 years ago, almost 3 years ago, was the very first one, conjunctured down in the east side in east of downtown, but it's more of a college startup, the people just mm-hmm. getting out of college. You would go there, and it's a home that was refurbished into a
sure.
co-working environment, but it reminds me of a fraternity. So for those who haven't left the fraternity scene in mm-hmm. college yet mm-hmm. and are using their startup, they're living in maybe a one-bedroom apartment, and they don't want to be at Starbucks all day, and they want to have a community,
sure.
they can go there. Here, it's more... it's a lot different. Here there's a more professional flavor, and all the others have different types of offerings as well, different characters for CoSpace, yeah. the co-working environments like CoSpace. But that's interesting about what you're creating. Now, you got the bug as an entrepreneur, you said, when you were at Digital Equipment Corporation at DEC working, and you found out that you could create things, but you were limited by, obviously, the corporate structure.
Sure.
And having been an IBM for 32 years, I know exactly what
yeah.
you mean. So... What kind of challenges when you launched your first business, the consultation business, for instance, or businesses, what were the big problems, the challenges, either as a founder or, you know, as a partner, you know, how did you deal and encounter with those, overcome those obstacles?
Well, the hardest thing I think it's about is you don't know what you don't know. And that's also a lesson in life. You know, if you live long enough, you learn a lot of things, but you still don't know everything. And one thing that works for you also works against you. So you start out as an entrepreneur, you have a lot of passion, you have a great idea in your mind, and you're ready to go and you have all the energy in the world, and that will carry you, you know, a fair ways. But at the end of the day, it's definitely a marathon.
It's a momentum giver. However, you've got other things that need to keep you running, like mm-hmm. fuel, which mm-hmm. is usually in the form of funding, energy, which you seem to run out of, mm-hmm. time, which you're always overwhelmed, etc. Sure. So which of these particular obstacles really hit you hardest and you overcame them?
Well, I actually, I was lucky. You know, the first one out of the chutes for me, we won.
Yeah, you said you had 150 people.
Yeah, well, we won big. It was a great win. Sometimes the lesson I'm trying to get to is that sometimes what's also a success can also work against you.
Because you don't have the experience of later on what you learned the hard
exactly.
way.
Exactly. You didn't know what you didn't know, and you run into a wall like I did, like I mentioned in my mm-hmm. quote, relocation to Austin, mm-hmm. my first hit the wall kind of moment. So, you know, you don't know what you don't know, and sometimes you can perceive something as a success, and actually the next time out that's going to work against you. So, you know, for me, I would have to say that from a legal perspective, from an accounting perspective, from a financing perspective, those sorts of core business things that you really don't want to miss are critical.
Right. And a lot of entrepreneurs, what they end up doing is basically they're shooting from the hip, they're having fun, their sure. excitement and energy is driving them forward, their enthusiasm is great, but they don't protect their intellectual property, they don't consult an attorney to make contracts and agreements,
exactly.
everything's done by handshake,
exactly.
everybody plans to do what everybody wants to do without documenting things, most of them don't even have a business plan, or a feasibility plan,
right.
or any kind of plan, and they don't manage to any plan, they manage from day to day at the hip and the excitement, all of a sudden they get hit with a problem, the economy. They get hit with legal
exactly.
problems. They get hit with cash flow problems. They get hit with customer problems. And next thing you know, they have to turn back. And the first thing that people ask them is, well, where's your business plan?
Mm-hmm.
And then that's when they say, we didn't think we needed one. And 80% of entrepreneurs launch without a business plan. They launch with enthusiasm.
Exactly.
Is that what you did? You launched with enthusiasm?
The first one, we had a lot of planning and preparation.
Okay.
But you still don't know everything. I guess for me, it was more about I had a couple of successes, and then, you know, without having to worry about all the issues, by the third one, I hit it pretty hard. I mean, I hit the wall real hard because I hadn't really learned those lessons I needed to learn right away.
Now, if you didn't have that experience from the lessons learned, which, by the way, a lot of young entrepreneurs don't. They think they can just go out and make it happen because they took a couple of entrepreneurial courses in college, et cetera. You still really need that experience. But if you don't have it, do you recommend, for instance, getting that expertise, like consulting with a business attorney that you trust, having your accounting or your CFO, or maybe a rogue CFO, and also making sure that you have somebody on the finance side that will make sure that you have the cash flow, and how much money you have now, what do you need, and how long can you survive, that sort of thing.
Absolutely. If you can find those kinds of folks early on in the process, that's the great way to go. I think take the approach as an internship. So, you know, these internships that are happening in college are a great idea. Sometimes they're even happening in, you know, advanced high school type things. Mm-hmm. Take that same approach while you're working in your regular job. Take that same approach and think of yourself as an intern for at least 6 months, probably a year. Go out there and start working. Do some work for a startup. Go get engaged. Again, go get engaged at a co-working facility. Things are happening in places like this. Go get engaged and see what it's all about. Ask questions. Spend the time. Do some of the work. And don't expect to get paid. Just go do your thing. And that's your investment. And it's far cheaper to learn those lessons in a non-hostile environment when you're helping somebody. Oh, by the way, if you're helping them, you're not only learning, you're building your network. You're finding out who are the better accountants in town, because they're not all created the same.
Right.
Who are the better lawyers in town? They're not all created the same. Who are the folks that know marketing? Because they're not all created the same. So anyway, do your homework that way. Do it on somebody else's nickel. You know, and even if you're contributing your services to them, and you know, it's somewhat costing you money or expenses, it's their time, it's their experience, it's their live bullets that are flying, not yours. And you're so much farther off. I mean, at least 6 months, and probably a year, and then you can even start to think about along the way what is it you're going to do, and obviously do the right planning. And now it's even you know, with things like the lean process, and you know, so you can find some great stuff on. entrepreneurship.org or Venture Hacks or some of these places where you can get very streamlined business plans that are geared towards lean product and lean startup. I'd highly recommend a book by Ash Murray here in town called Running Lean.
Running Lean.
Running Lean, highly recommended. You can find that at runningleanhq.com. I have no invested interest in that book, but it's how to build a product, how to build a web app, how to build a business with a lean process. And the whole point of lean isn't just about, it's classically about eliminating waste, hence lean, but it's most about making sure you have enough runway built into the process before you run out of resources. So learn as fast as you can with speed and focus so you can make really educated decisions about who your market is. What are the top three problems? Do you have a solution that's really going to solve those? Can you make money doing it before you actually build it?
Mm-hmm.
So,
I'll put a link in the show notes for Running Lean so that our listeners can go to it and actually check out that resource. What you said about internships,
mm-hmm.
for people who have launched already, the thought of an internship may be, oh, that's college kids.
Yeah.
I tend to disagree. Instead of looking at an internship with that terminology, I would say go out and provide free consultation services. And the way that you could do that is you investigate the firms that are out there, startups, see if you get along with the community, see if there's a charisma or a relationship that you can build or is being built right now, and then offer those free consultation services in the area of expertise that you have.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of being just an internship where a lot of people think you end up being a gopher,
mm-hmm.
just a task manager, go clean this, go do that.
Right.
You actually can just say, I got my expertise or my degree or my studies or whatever specialty I have, say in marketing, I can help this group in the marketing area mm-hmm. as a free consultant for a while. When they do that,
mm-hmm.
they provide value to them because they're not just learning at their on their dime. What they're doing is they're providing a service in exchange for not pay, but just in exchange for getting into the network, being involved in the company.
Absolutely.
And as you said, if they keep their eye open later on, they may be asked to come in either as an employee or a joint venture partner or later on, be part of a community such as the one that you're growing.
Exactly right. That's exactly right. And it's much, I would say none of this has ever been easy, but it's much easier today with the connectivity that we have and the collaborative environment with sort of this perfect storm that's happened with the economy. Folks are collaborating. Folks are coming together to do things. I even heard something on a TED broadcast today, something around collaborative consumption. It was all about the peer-to-peer sorts of sharing sites that are going on now. And people are, not quite an eBay model, but people are very open to really trying to work together and get things done.
Okay, let's talk a little bit more about your offering, because mm-hmm. it's something you're creating.
Yep.
You're now creating an offering. It's an application. It's an app. It's going to be running on probably the mobile devices, right?
Right.
Okay, as well as on the web.
Right.
And this particular app is going to enable groups or communities of people to be more productive and to be more engaging, right?
Exactly. The number one thing that we're finding is somebody who runs a group, and whether it be, let's take an alumni chapter, somebody who runs a group is incented to serve that group, keep them together, create more value for them, and so forth. The hard part they have is a simple thing of, where's all my information, where's my contact?
Yeah, the tools, right?
Yeah, exactly.
They go and bring in a Ning network, and then they go and get Salesforce.com, and then they go and get... I know some of the people who have just started and created spreadsheets just mm-hmm. to keep their communities organized. As a matter of fact, you know who Jason Alba is? I interviewed him as a struggling entrepreneur. He's the one that had the book about I'm on LinkedIn now what? He started his Jibber Jobber
mm-hmm.
only because he was frustrated because he was keeping a spreadsheet, and he said, I can't remember to which employer I sent this particular resume and what follow-up I needed. So he
right.
created a web-based type of follow-up system like that called Jibber Jobber, and it seemed to be doing pretty well. Made him go into a new venture. Now he's making a pretty successful living at that. So he created this platform. But I have a devil's advocate question for
sure,
you,
sure.
if I may play the devil's advocate, and that is, a lot of people, especially the listeners here that are more tech savvy, are going to probably say, wait a minute, are you competing with LinkedIn? Or are you competing with some of the social networks? What are you doing? Because LinkedIn seems to provide a lot of what you were saying.
Sure. Yeah, they do. Not at all. No, we'll work with those as well as Facebook and Twitter and all the rest. I'll say it this way. If you look at a thing like Dropbox, mm-hmm. all right, why is Dropbox successful? Dropbox is successful. It does basically file folders or syncing of data or of information, whatever. And why is it successful? It's because they didn't overbuild it. They didn't build, chat room and IM and video and da 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 on top of it. It just simply shares information in file folders and syncs that with your desktop. That's it. It doesn't do more than that. So what we're really focused on is creating a minimum viable product that does a very simple function, which is to bring all your contact information in one place and enable you as a group leader, as a person who's running a group, to be able to make what you do on a regular basis, introductions between people in the group, start conversations between segments of the group.
To meet the needs and requirements of that special community, exactly. Not any community, whatever size.
Exactly.
Yeah, what you're saying, it reminds me of a facility and an application that's on the web, meetup.com. Mm-hmm. Well, it has one purpose and one purpose only, mm-hmm. to get physical meetups enabled, get them going, and it provides all the tools for a meetup organizer exactly. to say, I don't have to worry about sending out an email. I don't have to worry about a message board. It's all contained there,
exactly.
and they limit it strictly to the meetup environment.
Exactly. And now when you're building tools today, when you're building web apps today, mobile apps today, everything's integrated. So you're not building these independent solutions. You have to integrate with things. So as long as you keep it simple, easy to use, and you integrate with things, then and you fit a niche, you can be successful. So we expect that. We've got some early commits for our private beta. I'm not going to go into the names, but hopefully when we launch our public beta on July 1st, we'll show you some of the folks. But it's some pretty significant groups out there, large groups, large associations that have subgroups underneath it. So we're really excited about it, and we're really, really focused on not overbuilding it.
So you're going to announce it April 1st, and the beta is going to be available July 1st to the public. And by the way, I signed up for the beta.
Okay.
It's on the website, which is at groupcharger.com,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
Okay, because I took a look at it before this interview, and I said, And I did sign up for the beta 21 days ago because I was interested in this. And I said, I have veterans organizations
perfect.
Which require this, and they are so starved for a tool that will be easy for them to use because they are taking various tools and everything. And you know what they end up doing out of frustration? These are veterans who are in their 50s, 60s. The frosty hairs like me, right?
Sure.
I'm a Vietnam veteran. I don't know if you were in the military.
No, my family was. I really appreciate you, sir.
Oh, thank you. But, I mean, the veterans groups, especially the ones in Korea, World War II, and Vietnam, they're already seniors. And what they do is they get so frustrated because the tool is so hard to customize or to use for them, they end up going back to paper.
Right.
And
right.
so I think a tool like yours, Group Charger, for veterans groups would be a real godsend if that tool could be easily used and customizable by that group. And the beta will tell all.
Absolutely.
I'm going to be looking at it with those kinds of
good,
eyes.
Good.
And knowing from the background that you've had and, of course, what the company that you've been involved in here, I suspect it's going to be very customizable. It's going to be probably a very good and great value to them. So let's talk about this other venture that you've got. From the terms of rhapsody, the Latin from the Greek rhapsoidia, I took Greek in high school, which means to sew together song and also work, right? So right. You put work and rhapsody together to form this?
Worksity.
Worksity, okay. Because when you said it the first time, I know our listeners are saying, what did he say? Worksity, like subsidy, right?
Yeah, right. Hopefully but
now you're talking about bringing together a community mm-hmm. by invitation only, closed. And as we were mentioning before the interview, I said, "Is this a country club?" Because what you're doing is you are being the decision makers in inviting different people to come together who are going to be these high powered people to, as you say, go through the lean process. Believe in that, and also develop different startups, right?
Absolutely. The main thing, when you're busy running a business, building a product, building a business, you get hit, at the start of the interview, you get hit with a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
You get the legal, you get the accounting, you get the marketing and sales, all those things. It's very difficult to stay topical and what's really working out there. So I can't, it's hard to stop and go, let me go learn about social media, let me go learn about online marketing, let me go learn about IP. And so, and you don't always have access to the resources you need. But if you're working with people that are in somewhat the same seat as you, they have a different perspective. They have other channels that you don't have access to. And as long as we're all talking the same language, and on our job, Curtis Dixon and I are the partners in this. Our job will be to help people go through this process.
And by the way, for our listeners, Curtis Dixon is the gentleman that was interviewed by myself about a year ago on Struggling Entrepreneur, and he is one of the founders of CoSpace. Absolutely. Just so our listeners go back and take a look at that particular podcast episode to find out more about Curtis Dixon. But go ahead.
Yeah, and our job as the leaders of Work City will be to help each member follow a 6-month program of lean development, and they can pick the topic if they're looking to exit their business, or they're looking to add a new product, or a new location, whatever their goal is, we'll help them through a 6-month program each year in which to follow the lean process and achieve that goal. And what we'll do is along the way is we'll draw in the other peers, their peers in Work City, their members in Work City, to help them evaluate at certain checkpoints. Are they ready to move forward to the next level? Have they really defined the problem well enough in which they can move forward to start building a solution? Have they put the solution together well enough that it's now something that they could productize and make money? Do they know the marketing channels well enough in which they can get to scale and start to grow this thing? Various pieces of the lean process, but we're going to be very diligent about putting people through it. At the end of the day, it really is about extending their runway, to achieve that goal before they run out of resources. So not necessarily lowering their burn rate per se, but that could be part of it too, through a shared resources type of an approach. But mainly it's about making sure that they don't go out and say, well, we've got the right problem defined, we've got the right solution, let's go ahead and build a big product and spend $100,000 on a product, and guess what? They didn't get the problem right. And now they've wasted that time, that effort, that team energy, et cetera. And so, and obviously, that's not the way you want to move forward. So we're looking at how to grow it beyond Austin, beyond this one sort of chapter that we have here. But we certainly think it's applicable to just about any place in the country where builders live, where there's new entrepreneurs coming on board, where there's investors who are interested in well-constructed companies and products, that there's definitely a growth strategy to this. It's mm-hmm. definitely a passion we have. So.
What you're saying, it reminds me of possibly visualizing a business incubator on steroids. However, it's a little bit different. There's the idea of the network, the growing, the resources, mm-hmm. the peer support that you've got,
absolutely.
Which in an incubator or an accelerator type program may not be there. As a matter of fact, in the Struggling Entrepreneur, we actually had a guest podcaster who gave a podcast saying beware of incubator companies, because a lot of them are basically profit building scams where they graduate you from this course and they throw you out to the wolves and you say, okay, now you're anointed as an entrepreneur, go ahead and make your millions. And as soon as these people with their ideas go to the first angel investor or venture capitalist firm, they get shot down, and all of a sudden reality, they get the cold water thrown in their face, and they say, all this money I spent on the incubator or the accelerator, I spent money for this incubator firm, and guess what? It's not working.
Well, you know, we lost a generation, at least a generation of jobs here in the last 2+ years, right? So we've got a hopefully half a generation or so of growth to get those things back. And we're in competition. You know, we're in competition with China directly. This next century is ours to continue to win. But we're going to have to do it with hard work, innovation, people coming together, and getting behind good ideas, getting behind good people and good products. And we think we're one component, as incubators are, as VC-backed startups are, as bootstrap startups are, et cetera. We're just one component in the mix. But it's definitely something that Curtis and I see as sort of our lifelong passion, is to focus on entrepreneurship, focus on education, and through that, focus on economic development.
Right. And for our listeners, they actually have on the webpage of workcity.com, if you go to the link that tells about us, they answer a lot of questions like, how is this different than an incubator or an accelerator, et cetera. And I encourage listeners to read that, because they can get an idea of how this is, as I said, it's incubator plus on steroids plus a whole lot of other resources available that the incubators just don't give to you. And your success and your criteria for success is going to be how many of these can go past the 6 months and grow and be successful as businesses, right?
Absolutely. And we actually have, we have a president of a $180 million company here in Austin who's going to join it. So somebody who wants to go launch some other products, launch some other geographies. So it isn't just about startups. They want to learn about the newest techniques and video marketing and social media and other things that'll help their business. So from their perspective, it's more of a vestige for, if you're familiar with Vistage, mm-hmm. It's more of a Vistage for business builders.
Right. What we call stage two entrepreneurs. These are not mm-hmm. the ones that have created a firm as a startup from the beginning, but actually came in, took it over as a failing or a trouble type of firm, and then build it up as a solopreneur.
Yeah. And business leaders who want to inject entrepreneurial principles into their current organization.
Create entrepreneurship within their firm that's sorely lacking, because maybe it got stifled too much with the bureaucracy. Okay, we've been talking quite a bit about what you've been doing and the offering that you have, what you're doing now about WorkCity. Wanted to ask you to take a step back. Mm-hmm. Having all this success for these 20, 30 years, if someone came to you as an aspiring entrepreneur or as a recently launched entrepreneur, because those are the two audiences we have, and they were excited, and they came up to you and they said, should I really get into this? Here's my idea. I'm all enthusiastic. What words of wisdom would you tell them?
If
they said, should I really do it or not, especially if they're working in a day job?
Absolutely. I think they really should always follow their passion. I think life is meant to be lived. And so you have to follow your passion. So you shouldn't deny yourself that. But I'd say, and we talked about it a little bit, but I'd just say that there's lots of great ways that you don't have to hit a wall to follow your passion. You can still have a healthy lifestyle. You can still have a healthy family. You can still be successful and all those things. You can have all of those sorts of things. If you take a moment, you're not going to hit your 500th home run your first time at bat. Okay, so if you want to hit lots of home runs, get good at hitting singles. Get a lot of cuts at it, and eventually you start hitting home runs. Eventually, guess what? You might hit 500 home runs in your career. That's great, but if you really love this, if you really love entrepreneurship, you're going to do it for a lifetime. So, it is a marathon of a lot of sprints. So just slow down. Take your time, enjoy the ride, follow your passion, work with great people, and make sure you give back, because that's the only reason that this is such a valuable profession, is you get the opportunity to create wealth and then do something with it. So I just encourage everybody to find a way to give back to their community and share that success.
All right. On the tails of that, I wanted just to add one thing. Chris Brogan, who happens to be a very successful blogger in the social media space, you know how long it took him before he got his 100th blog subscriber?
Oh, wow. I don't know.
8 years.
Wow.
8 years before he got 100 subscribers to his blog. And now, look, he's making a living as a writer, an author, a blogger, social media expert, and everything else. By the way, we had him on the show about a year ago, and we interviewed him and Julian, who happened to be the co-author of the book, Trust Agents. So I highly recommend the book, because it tells about the value of trust in today's social media world.
That's interesting. I think that there's some frontiers coming up here with obviously trust and reputation and privacy and it's going to be an interesting next 10 or 20 years.
Very challenging.
Very challenging. Lots of data, lots of information out there. What are we going to do with all this? And whether that's from a privacy standpoint, security standpoint. So it's going to be a very interesting time frame. I encourage everybody to stay positive. And we're a great country, and we are successful. We're going to continue to be successful. Find your place, find your role, get in there and go to work. Start building something, and enjoy the ride.
Okay. Now, if our listeners wanted to contact you, where would they go? And especially if they want to participate in the beta.
Probably the easiest way to go is go to groupcharger.com for the private beta and just sign up there, and we'll be back to you quickly on that. If you want to speak with me personally, the easiest way is to send me an email at james@WorkCity, WORKSODY.com.
They can get that through the through your website, right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And I will definitely respond to anyone who contacts me.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate what you've given us here, which happens to be not just a product, but also giving back to a community by forming a community of high-powered lean entrepreneurs. And so, James Whittle from CoSpace here, the co-working environment in Austin, Texas, I'd like to thank you for sharing with us these few moments, especially with the expertise that you've had in multiple startups as an entrepreneur.
Thanks, Fred. And I'm glad we could spend the time. And who said that IBM and DAC couldn't get along, right?
Exactly. And they flip-flop between leaders, right?
Yeah.
First, DAC was on top of the world, where the network is everything.
Yeah.
And then IBM came back, and e-business and the network, et cetera.
Great history,
and it's a shame that DAC no longer exists.
Yeah, that's true.
And
that's
the sad thing is, too, that Mr. Olson passed away.
I didn't know that. That's really is sad. He's a great man.
Anyway, thank you very much, James Whittle.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
You've been listening to The Struggling Entrepreneur at www.strugglingentrepreneur.com. Now, if you listen to this podcast episode through some click-to-play option, well, then thank you very much. But do consider subscribing to this podcast show series so that you can have all the future episodes delivered directly to you the moment that they're released. Until then, we'll see you next time. Podcast music provided by and licensed from MichaelandMike.com. Musicians, composers, and authors of soft jazz music. Future episodes of the Struggling Entrepreneur podcast will contain music from MichaelandMike.com under license.